Thank you for joining us for ACT, No Matter What, the Planned Parenthood Advocates of Arizona podcast. And now, your host, Ethan Cox, Director of Development.
Hello, and thank you so much for joining us for the PPAA ACT No Matter What podcast. This is our very first ACT No Matter What podcast, and we're so excited to be joined today by Lola Bovell, who is the Executive Director of Planned Parenthood Advocates of Arizona. Welcome, Lola.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, great to have you here. So, Lola, I'm going to do the boring part really quickly and go through your wonderful bio, and then we'll launch into the exciting Q&A.
Sounds good.
So, Lola is an accomplished attorney, recognized for her career dedication to advocating for immigrant communities, civil rights, and social justice. She brings valuable experience to this critical moment in the reproductive freedom movement. During her law school career, Lola served as a clinical law student with the Immigrant Justice Clinic, where she observed firsthand the systemic injustices immigrants face in the United States. This led her to advocate fiercely for IJC's continuation and success at University of Wisconsin Law. She also interned with Latino Justice Puerto Rican Legal Defense and Education Fund in New York City during her second year in law school, where she gained knowledge about impact litigation and civil rights issues affecting the Latin population nationally. Upon graduating from law school, Lola worked with the Rise Law Center, a nonprofit law office in Madison, Wisconsin, providing culturally relevant legal services to immigrant survivors of domestic and sexual abuse. She then moved to Arizona to join the Florence Immigrant and Refugee Rights Project to legally represent and serve the thousands of immigrants detained every day at the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement detention centers in Eloy and Florence in Arizona. She began as a staff attorney and was promoted to the role of managing attorney a little over a year later. Outside of her tireless work in advancing social justice, Bovell is an avid supporter of the arts and has a strong background in music performance, playing both clarinet and piano. She also has a particular love for musical theater productions. It's my great pleasure to welcome Lola. So, Lola, I'm really fascinated and have been since I started here by PPAA's candidate endorsement process. Can you just give us an overview of how that all comes together? Because it seems like a really, really heavy lift.
Yeah, I would say it's a pretty heavy lift. So the first part is really just having candidates submit their applications online. We tend to let folks know that the applications are available through our social media, through emails, et cetera. But ultimately, also, it is the responsibility of candidates themselves as well to seek us out and to look for that application. So once they fill out the application, we try to make it as non-lengthy. So we try to make it as short as possible and give also lots of opportunities for submitting additional supplemental materials. So that's the first step. Then we have the honor of bringing in our wonderful board of directors, our Planned Parenthood Advocates of Arizona board of directors. And we have a specific committee on the board that then interviews all of these candidates with staff. So it's a combined effort with our government relations team, myself, as well as a couple of our board members and board leaders. And those interviews, they may be only 15 minutes apiece, but wow, you know, when you have, I would say, 100 plus candidates, you know, applying for our endorsement, they can definitely add up. And so there are many late nights, I would say, in election years where all of us are doing those interviews. So from there, between staff and the board committee, we make recommendations in terms of who to endorse, who not to endorse. And then our wonderful board chair this year, but in, you know, in future years, it could be someone else. It probably will be someone else. But in 2020, it's Chris Love. And she brings to the PPAA board all of the recommendations. And then ultimately, the board votes. And that's how the endorsement process works. And we usually do that a couple of times. So it's like, you know, maybe about three different times. So we try to maybe start with some of the state legislature candidates, particularly those that have been endorsed before, that don't necessarily have to go through as rigorous of a process, to then going through folks that have not been endorsed before, and then finally going forward with more of like the city, local, and school board races. So there's about like three rounds of these that we go through for the, I would say, for about 4 or 5 months that we're going through this process.
And that's every election year that you're doing that?
Every election year, yes. And I will just add, you mentioned a good point, Ethan. You know, so Tucson, for example, will sometimes have elections on off years, right? And so it's not as intense those off years, but so we're pretty much doing this every year. But in terms of like big, heavy election years, like presidential election years, like the one that we're in right now here in 2020, you know, it can be pretty extensive.
And you mentioned a questionnaire that you ask candidates to fill out, as well as an interview that they'll do. What are some of the questions that get asked on that questionnaire and in those interviews?
Sure. So a lot of times it depends on the candidate, right? And their particular race that they're running for. Questions will oftentimes revolve around, how do you plan on advocating for reproductive rights?
Sure.
How do you plan on advocating for sex education? So it's questions like that. In addition, we also ask questions that sometimes are seen as a little bit broader, but we find to be issues that are still very much important to us. So just kind of differentiating real quick for the listeners, the difference between reproductive rights and reproductive justice. Reproductive rights is very much like literally there is a legal right to do X, Y, or Z. But that legal right can really be something kind of in name only if there's no access to that care or whatever that right is trying to make sure people have access to, I guess, for lack of a better word. So kind of in that vein, if you're looking at politics, if you're looking at our legal system, if you're looking at the laws from a reproductive justice standpoint, we're really thinking about more than just kind of an individual's right. We're really thinking about like what laws can we put in place to really make sure that every individual, right, in Arizona has access to the care they need, whether that be for birth control, whether that be for kind of regular, you know, exams that need to happen, as well as abortion care. So we ask questions essentially like making sure that we're incorporating a broader lens. So it could even be, for example, thinking about racial justice, right? Because part of the reproductive justice lens is really giving every single person an opportunity to decide when and how they're going to have children, and if they do decide to have children, that their children can be raised in a safe and sustainable community. And so to be able to ensure that, we have to be looking at issues like systemic racism and police violence and things like that. Anywho, that's a long way of saying, yes, we talk about being pro-choice, and yes, we talk about reproductive rights, and yes, we ask about sex education, and we have these conversations also about, you know, folks and their previous electoral and their legislative histories, assuming they're a legislator. But we also take it broader. Like, what are your visions for criminal justice reform? What is your vision for racial justice? And how are you going to advocate for our most underprivileged, marginalized communities in the state?
That's really interesting. It's not just about their stance on being pro-choice or in favor of safe legal abortion, but so many other things. I know recently there was an email that we sent out about the Black Lives Matter movement. Why is it so important that we take a stance on issues like this? I know you touched on it a bit in your previous answer, but do you get pushback for that? People telling you stay in your lane?
Ethan, asking me this question, you know the answer. So yes, we do get pushback sometimes. And I think there, you know, it's just, we are also broadening and growing as an organization as well. And I think in the past, you know, Planned Parenthood, You know, whether it's true or not, even though I would say it probably is true, you know, was really categorized as kind of like this wealthy, middle class to elderly white woman's organization. And not that there's anything wrong with that whatsoever, but oftentimes that's really where the reproductive justice movement came in the 1990s. But a lot of brown and black communities really felt like their needs were not being met. So I think whereas maybe years ago, it was just really important that endorsed candidates said that they were pro-choice, they checked the box, they would vote the right way, and that was it. But as kind of described earlier, you know, if we do that, we are just completely ignoring the issue of access. So yeah, sure, like folks have this right, but if they have to travel 4 hours to get to the closest provider because they live in a rural community, and that also means that they have to stay the night somewhere, And maybe that's economic justice, right? We're looking at now because they maybe had to take 2 days off of work and they had to also pay for a hotel room. So just, you know, we really, to make sure that we're truly talking about, really thinking about reproductive freedom for everyone, you know, we really need to make sure we're looking at this broader lens. So yeah, absolutely. Black Lives Matter, racial justice movements, you know, we are very much intending on taking those issues on, you know, very much and very, very strongly and unapologetically, because we are advocating for every single community to have access to care and every single community to be able to raise their children in safe and sustainable environments.
And so I guess that leads me to wonder, what are the deal breakers outside of the obvious? If I'm a candidate that's running for office and I put on my questionnaire, yes, I'm in favor of Black Lives Matter, but maybe I'm accepting money from an organization for my campaign that doesn't share those same values. Is that a possible deal breaker for endorsement?
I think that's where, you know, we're changing as an organization, right? So in 2020, our board actually just changed their policy in regards to this very issue, where they are requesting each of the endorsed candidates to, if they've received any money from police-oriented organizations, to either return those funds, to not eventually be beholden to them when they're making votes, but to return those funds or divest those funds and really invest them in initiatives and organizations that really support and help thrive Black and Brown communities. So at this point, that's the request. Moving forward, though, the understanding is very much if you wish to be an endorsed candidate of Planned Parenthood Advocates of Arizona, you do need to fully share our values. And so I think whereas now it was more of a request because this is the first year, I think down the line we're really moving in a direction where, you know, we're going to prioritize every single community. If a candidate has a problem with that, then that would essentially be a deal breaker.
Right. I love that. It makes so much sense for the work that we do. The last thing I wanted to ask you about is, on a personal level, why does this work mean so much to you? Knowing you the past year, I see this is clearly more than a job for you. It's a crusade of sorts. I think most of us that work here come to this work with something more than just needing a job. What is it for you that's the passion?
I think without giving too much information and going, you know, too deep into a personal story, but I will say that my family has very much dealt with reproductive rights. My grandmother is the ultimate matriarch who was way beyond her time. Just having those people to look up to, I think every day when I show up and do this work, I'm really thinking about her and the struggles that she went through because these rights didn't, the rights that we have today, you know, in 2020 didn't exist in the 1940s, didn't exist in the 1950s. So it's just, I think, a real reminder that we can't take these rights, our rights, for granted. And as as we can see right now, Ethan, I mean, we've essentially been kind of slipping back and slipping back. And so now we're finding ourselves in a situation where we really have to protect our rights, reproductive rights, I mean, civil rights, social justice, and abortion rights, frankly. So yeah, I would say what motivates me is just knowing that I have these powerful women that have dealt with, you know, really difficult circumstances and have survived and have made it possible for me to be the person that I am today. And so I'm going to fight like hell to make sure that future generations continue to have the rights that they fought so hard for.
Yeah. I know that when people ask me that question, I'm not in a great place and I just want to not have to answer. I just say, it's personal. It's truly personal is why I do this work. And that's not to be evasive. It's because it affects me on a personal level. And I know that it does for most everyone that works here. It's so much more, you know, and that's what makes it so really wonderful sometimes.
I agree.
Thank you so much, Lola. This was really great. Very informative, even for me, who knows the inside scoop sometimes. And thanks all of you for listening in. We look forward to seeing you again on our next podcast of the ACT No Matter What podcast. Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed what you heard, please rate and subscribe on iTunes. See you next time.